Okay, Choose FI, welcome to episode 20 of the Choose FI radio podcast. In this episode, Brad and I are going to peel back the curtain and show you exactly what two guys living an entry-level middle-class lifestyle while pursuing financial independence, we're going to show you exactly what that lifestyle and budget actually looks like. Welcome to the show.
You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
Hi, Brad. Welcome back to the studio.
Hey, Jonathan. This should be a good one.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to it.
Same here. Now, we have actually had this is a little bit of a change for our audience. You know, if you remember, for our first 10 episodes, it was just me and you, man. And then we took a little bit of a step away from that and we moved to this really, probably frankly, in some cases, more awesome model where we brought in these contributors and bloggers, these really rock stars in the personal finance space and just dropped some bombs of knowledge on us. And really, that's been for the last 2 to 3 months. But now we're back and we're doing a special episode.
Yeah, this should be a good one. We had just such an amazing run of guests and we're certainly going to continue that. So no worries out there. We're definitely working to get the best guests that we can possibly get. But frankly, we just like talking. And we like talking about this. And, you know, Jonathan and I are sitting here 2 feet apart. And you know, we just love talking about FI and about how to save money and life hacks and all these things. And, you know, so we're going to throw these episodes and, you know, intersperse them in with guests, certainly as the weeks go by.
So let's just real quick, let's catch up. What all have we talked about so far? We walked through how to crush your food budget, fitness while being frugal, the basic principles of investing with Jim Collins. We've talked about building a money framework with Mr. 1500, how to save 75% of your take-home pay with Frugal Woods, tax loss harvesting capital gains and capital losses with Go Curry Cracker. And we've talked about we talked about one of my favorites was Millionaire Educator, how to save 100 grand a year in pre-tax buckets and the unfair advantage for teachers, firefighters, police officers. And then we unpacked travel rewards, how to travel the world for free. So, you know, it feels like that was so long ago, but at the same time, it feels like it was yesterday. And Brad and I had this goal from the very beginning of telling a story and kind of walking you through all these completely different ideas and then building a story and showing you how it fits together so you can figure out how to take all that stuff and put it in your own personal framework. And I think at least to that point, you know, I believe we've accomplished that, but I believe y'all are telling us that we are doing that. This is the episode where we just pat ourselves on the back for that. And then we keep on going, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, in today's episode, we're going to take a little different approach. So we're going to kind of go line by line through our major expenses on our budget, you know, each and every month and talk to you guys about what we're doing, where there are places where we're saving, you know, we have life hacks and we're saving money and, you know, maybe even some frugal fails, right? Like where we're spending money. I know, you know, we have like an alarm system on our house, which is absolutely ridiculous, frankly, but you know, that's a couple $100 a year that we're, you know, it's just completely wasted. But, you know, these are the kind of things that you guys need to hear. You need to hear, you know, the hacks where we're saving, but, you know, also know that we're regular middle-class guys. You know, we're not doing anything revolutionary. We're living a normal life, but just a little bit smarter. So, you know, that's what this is all about. And, you know, this is taking a lot of inspiration from Mr. Money Mustache's article, How to Go from Middle Class to Kick Ass. I think that's where I got the idea for this particular episode. But whereas his is just kind of, you know, made up, essentially, you know, we're going to actually talk to you about what we're spending in our real lives.
And we're just going to kind of go through it one line item at a time. So I think one of the things, Brad and I are really just two regular dudes. And I know that y'all think that because you tell us, yeah, y'all guys are just two regular dudes. Yes, yes, we are. So we both kind of have found this sweet spot that we think is this sweet spot, this entry-level middle-class lifestyle. Now, we don't quite fit into the Money Mustache 24 grand a year scenario because we don't have paid-off mortgages. I think both of us are strongly considering that, you know, at some point. And if we did, I'm sure that we would be kind of in that $25,000 to $35,000 range. But we're just kind of going to go through all the different things that we spend money on and maybe where we were and then how we optimized it and, you know, where we may still be failing, frankly, in many cases. So I think you might be surprised and I think I might be embarrassed by some of the things that I have to tell you during this conversation. But hopefully that this is fun and useful and just give us your feedback, you know, in the show notes, in the comments, you know, leave us a review on iTunes if you appreciate the show. And let's go ahead and get started. So Brad, what line item do you want to start with?
I think let's start with the big one. Let's start with mortgage. I think that's, housing price, mortgage, that kind of thing. I think that's a good way to jump off.
Yeah. So mortgage. So my mortgage, between my mortgage and my property taxes currently, that all averages out to around $1,200 a month. And I picked that intentionally. When we were moving to a home, we searched for a neighborhood that was going to be in a good school district. It had access to a library. It had access to, you know, a grocery store that was relatively close. One of the things when we were picking out the home and we were driving by it, I wanted to make sure that you could actually slow down on the street to actually look at the house on your left and your right. I mean, there were a lot of houses that were in that were more expensive, but they were on really busy roads. And I felt nervous, frankly, just to slow my car down and actually take a look at the house. And so for me, that was always just when you're picking out a home and when you're trying to decide what neighborhood to move to, that was one of my criteria. I just want to be able to slow down in the neighborhood to feel safe, to not feel like someone's going to run into me, to not feel like my child is, there's any danger of them running out into the road and getting run over. My wife had the criteria that it needed to be in a good school district. And then, you know, it needed to be accessible to different amenities. All those are pretty basic things. I also looked for like an older neighborhood. I didn't want necessarily a cookie cutter brand new home. We picked something that was probably made in 1975. It was an older neighborhood, but I could tell that it was going through this kind of generational turnover. And actually that has been true. So all the families were, you know, it was an older neighborhood when I got here. And as they were moving off, in many cases, their kids were coming in and buying it. And all the kitchens had to be redone, you know, and there was definitely room to grow. But what I'm seeing now in this same neighborhood is the houses are just getting snatched up like that. So I don't know if there's a life hack there. I'm not great at real estate. Brad and I want to do some stuff with real estate going forward. But those are just the different things that I looked for when we were moving into a neighborhood. Do you think there's any value there, Brad?
Yeah, I think for sure. You know, certainly buying into an established neighborhood, I think there's definitely value there. I think, you know, finding, you know, in the Richmond metro area where we both live, you know, there are a lot of these ritzy new developments that, you know, you're buying new construction and you're paying a huge premium for it. Whereas, you know, there are a ton of these neighborhoods that are established where you can get a really nice middle class or upper middle class, you know, 2000 square foot house thereabouts for $200,000 or thereabouts. And, you know, honestly, I live in a slightly more expensive area than Jonathan does, but I think we took like a life hack type approach to purchasing, which was when we did the research and we wanted to move down here, you know, we looked around and it was pretty clear to us that we wanted to be in this one general area. And you know, there's lots of shopping. It's kind of, in my opinion, it's the epicenter of the Richmond metro area. And, you know, there are tons of very expensive homes in that area. And, you know, obviously that was not something where we were interested in at all. So what we did was we tried to find the sweet spot, which is what we're always looking for. At that point, we wound up buying a really nice 4-bedroom house in one of, if not the absolute best school districts in the whole area. And, you know, it wasn't in an established, you know, huge neighborhood. It wasn't brand new, but it was new enough. It was only like 15 years old at that point, and nice 4-bedroom house. And I think our purchase price was $270,000, which is very, very reasonable, especially, you know, now after refinancing a couple of times, our mortgage payment is only $1,150 a month. And, you know, most people, when you say, oh, I live in the Short Pump area, which sounds silly to people outside of Richmond, but when you tell people you live there, it's like, you know, people must think, you know, your house is expensive or you must be paying out the nose. And we're just simply not. I mean, of that $1,150, you know, I'm looking at my spreadsheet here, over $350 of it goes to principal. So, you know, we're under $800 a month in expense every single, that's it, $800 to have a four bedroom house in what I would argue is the absolute best part of the metro area to live in. And of that 800, some of that we get back because some of that is, you know, interest and tax deductions. So, you know, our actual net out of pocket cost to live there is well less than $800 a month. So, I mean, that's remarkable, really, to spend well less than $10,000 a year on a house. And it's just, again, being a little bit smarter. We could have bought a significantly newer house. We could have bought a significantly larger house, but we knew what we needed. And what we needed was four bedrooms. And what we wanted was to live in this one particular school district. And it just worked out well for us. So, I mean, you know, we were very intentional about that purchase.
Very cool. Very cool. Let's see here. I don't have a ton of hacks on real estate right now, as y'all are going to figure out. Now, Brad and I, after, you know, we are absolutely committed to tiptoeing into real estate and maybe starting something down the road. And we'll share a little bit more with you. We're not quite there in terms of presenting that to y'all, but as we move into fall, I think y'all will start to hear a little bit more about how we're preparing to get involved in real estate. And we'll probably have some more real estate life hacks to present to you at that point in time. But for right now, just for the sake of transparency, that's what's going on. Let's talk about homeowners insurance for a little bit. Anything there? I mean, is there any room that you have for savings? Any advice that you would give to anybody?
I mean, I think with anything insurance related, it would just be shop around, get a couple quotes, and don't be complacent. It's easy to just pay your homeowner's insurance or your car insurance every single year and just kind of put it on autopilot. But I would definitely suggest, and you know, I fall down on this too. I don't check as often as I want, but or I should, but maybe every year, every 2 years, just get some quotes. There's literally no downside to it. You could basically send out an email to a local agent or two and just get a couple of quotes and see what you can save. Jonathan, I think, has some hacks on car insurance potentially about comprehensive and collision insurance, and you know, he's a little more adept than I am at that, so maybe he can talk about it. But as far as homeowners insurance, I would say just simply get some quotes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely skeptical on insurance. I mean, you need it. I realize that you need it. But you got to also realize that everything is a pay now or pay later situation, and it's a risk to benefit. I think that's the way that we analyze every single line item in our budget. When you decide to pay more for insurance, you got to also calculate into that equation the likelihood that you may actually need it, and then also what's the worst that could happen if you didn't have it. So I kind of use that operating principle when I'm deciding, you know, not if I need coverage necessarily, but how much coverage I need. And I think from the fire community, at some point down the line, you kind of are self-insured to a large degree just by having a massive emergency fund and a large nest egg that you've been tucking away. And so I think in most cases, you know, I come down on the side that you should still have it to cover the worst. But do you need their premium package that gives you all the features? No, probably not, because in many cases, you can cover a $5,000 or $10,000 expense in the odd chance that it were to happen. What you really need protection from is the apocalypse, right? So just keep that in mind. So I, you know, in almost all my insurances, I move my deductibles up to 500 or 1,000 or 2,000 or whatever they'll let me get away with. And I'm looking for that savings and premium, which is my guaranteed savings. And I backslide on the other half, which Brad was talking about, which is holding them accountable and price shopping. I am the worst at just, I don't want to take the time to call five or six people. So initially, I absolutely do that. I price shop, I find a price. And unfortunately, they know that you're going to be lazy about it. And so you'll see them every year. They hike up your premiums on almost everything, $5 or $10. So it's almost, it should be required to at least every couple of years you go and you price shop to make sure they're still being competitive. But I don't take my own advice on that. So I'm just going to be honest.
Yeah, no, I totally hear you. It's easy to say and hard to do. But yeah, you know, if you haven't done it in X number of years, just make the calls or shoot an email. So, you know, one other aspect of insurance is life insurance. I don't know, Jonathan, have you guys got life insurance yet, or is that post?
Yeah, you know, historically, I never really felt like I needed it because the worst case scenario, my student loans just weren't going to get paid and there was really nothing that they could grab as collateral. So, you know, I just wasn't too worried about it. But with a child almost being here, I do have some thoughts on it. And I can go ahead and share those with you if you're ready for it. Now, I do not know all the ins and the outs of the life insurance industry. I think probably at some point we could probably get someone involved that can really share with us all the nuances. But just for the sake of where I'm at, I really am still a Dave Ramsey guy on this one. Now, I listened to Dave Ramsey for years. And if you did, you know that he tells you, you know, term. And without going into all the reasons that he says why, let me just tell you my thoughts on it. Like I said earlier, at some point you're going to be self-insured. What is the purpose of life insurance? The purpose of life insurance is to take care of those that will outlive you if for some reason you don't have a nest egg. So you die, there's going to be about an immediate $20,000 cost to your death. Who's going to bear that burden? You know, is it going to, who's going to have to bury you, and can they afford that $20,000, that $20,000 cost? That's the immediate cost. But then there's the loss of earning potential. So, you know, you are the main income provider for your family. And if you are making $40,000 or $60,000 or $80,000, that income is now gone. So you have an obligation to make sure that those that are outliving you are not in a worse financial situation due to your passing. Now, this is just morbid stuff, but essentially, though, if I die, I don't want my wife to be, you know, to be broke or on the street. And so at some point, though, you guys got to realize this, the path that you are on will self-insure you. Now, hopefully you have a good relationship with your spouse and she's not waiting for the day that you're worth $2 million because she doesn't need you anymore. But realistically, from a financial perspective, at some point, if you are creating passive income, you're no longer in the situation where you need to make sure that they are going to, your income's going to be replaced because you've already taken care of that. You've self-insured yourself. If you're worth $1 million and you die, your spouse is going to be okay. Especially if you guys have been working as a team to build this framework for your family of, you know, the FIRE financial independence lifestyle. She's going to be great. She's going to be phenomenal. You may have been holding her back. So, you know, just keep that in mind. And so if, how do you apply that? You don't need life insurance for life. You need it for a period of time. So there's two different types of life insurance. There's whole life insurance and there's term life insurance. And I'm not going to really dig into whole life because I'm going to show my ignorance if I do, but I'll just focus on the term. Term basically says you have insurance for a period of time and you can pick it. It can be a 10-year term. It can be a 20-year term. Or it can be a 30-year term. If you were to pass away within that period of time, you will get paid out a certain amount and you can specify what that is. If it's $500,000, if it's $100,000, if it's $1 million. And so the way the premiums are determined are based on whether or not you picked a, you know, a 10-year term or 20 or a 30-year term. The longer the term, the higher that monthly premium is going to be. And then also the second factor is the value of the term. How much are they going to pay out? So if you were to die within that 10-year window, are they going to pay you $100,000, $1 million, $5 million? You know, you pick that as well. And then the third factor is how old are you and do you have pre-existing conditions when you apply for it? So it does behoove you to get it at a younger age, which decreases your premium. And then also, you know, that term, how long you're going to have it for. So 20 is going to cost more than 10, 30 is going to cost more than 20. So my sweet spot is going to probably be a 20-year term. And I will set that for, you know, you got to pick something, but basically you could calculate it based on how much your lifestyle cost. So if you need, essentially it's the same math that we use for safe withdrawal rate. You know, if you need, $40,000 or $30,000 a year in passive income in order to maintain your lifestyle. So you would probably need somewhere around $700,000 to $1 million payout, you know, it essentially provide you with that. And then your family is going to be just fine. And depending on what you end up choosing and what that number came out with, you should price shop it, but you're looking at somewhere in between $20 to $70 a month. How does that sound, Brad?
Yeah, no, that sounds exactly right. It's term life insurance is just a simple bet. You know, basically you're paying the insurance company X number of dollars per year. And, you know, if you die, they hand your family a whole boatload of money. And if you don't, you just, you know, keep paying that policy premium every single year. And at the end of the term, it just expires. And that's that. So it's, you know, it is insurance in the simplest form. So, yeah, I mean, Jonathan's exactly right. This is something where, you know, people on the FI path can think about it a little bit differently. Like he mentioned, you know, the 25 times the annual expenses is, you know, essentially what you would need. And obviously if you have money saved up, you know, then that kind of bites into that total amount you need. So, you know, whereas an insurance agent might say, oh, you need $2 million in term insurance, chances are you need a fraction of that. So be cognizant of that.
And on that same line, also, when you talk to an insurance agent, every single time, it doesn't matter if you tell them I'm only interested in term life insurance. At the end of the conversation, they're going to come back and they're going to suggest cash, whole value life. I mean, every single time without fail, they're going to suggest it to you. And maybe in some specific scenarios, it may be a good bet. In fact, one of our contributors, Edmund, has posed the point that there may be some value there. And I'm willing to consider that. We're not dogmatic about anything. I'm not 100% against them. But my preference is if you want to invest, and he says it'd be a good idea as an investment vehicle. My preference, just naturally speaking, without more information, would be if you're going to invest, pick a really good investment like Vanguard. It's just keep it simple. I don't need the nuances necessarily. If you want an investment vehicle, choose a great investment vehicle like Vanguard. If you need insurance, my thought is that you only need insurance for a short period of time while you're in this window from when we talked about Jeremy, the financial freedom clock, right? You get to zero and now you're working on getting to financial independence. The financial freedom clock has started. My thought is you're going to get there within 10 years if you're doing all this stuff. I mean, it's just, I think the math works for you. I think we've demonstrated that. So you just need that short window of time. And then I don't care about it anymore. I mean, once your 20-year term is up and you're financially independent and you're worth $2 million, just drop it. I mean, now you're saving 50, 70 bucks a month. You can start thinking about long-term care insurance or some of this other crazy stuff. And I don't know anything about that. So maybe I can ask Brad his opinion. But I'm just saying in the short term for right now, you know, my life from an insurance perspective, yeah, I have car insurance, but I just use liability because I can cover $500 to $2,000 to $5,000 in an accident if it were to happen. But I need something in case I were to do something stupid or something bad were to happen and put someone else's life in jeopardy. I need something to protect me from the big what if. Home insurance. You know, I can cover the $1,000, $2,000 expense, no problem. I need something if my house were to burn down or something really bad were to happen that I way out of my control. And then the same, I have that same perspective when it comes to life insurance. I need the term because right now, if I were to die, it would crush my wife's financial future right now. But, you know, 10, 15 years from now, it's going to be a non-factor. I will be self-insured just by virtue of having implemented all the other stuff we're talking about. You know, that's the way I see it.
Yeah, I'm with you. And just a final note on this is since we're pulling back the curtain, that's the whole point of this is, you know, our term insurance for my wife and I, we did 30-year policies, which, you know, honestly, if we could do it again, we would probably do 20 because the annual expense would have been less. But I think I have a $700,000 policy and it costs $500 per year. And Laura, I believe, has a $500,000 policy and it costs about $350 per year. So, you know, these are pretty small total amounts. You know, it's under $1,000 per year that we're spending. And, you know, obviously this is to safeguard our family and our kids if, you know, something happened to us. So, you know, those are, while not the, you know, $2 million death benefit that the insurance agent would tell you, you know, $500,000, we can easily pay off our mortgages. We could put money away into, you know, for college and still have some leftover. And, you know, that's on top of all the money that we have saved, you know, in our normal net worth. So, you know, that's more than sufficient as far as we're concerned. So, yeah, that's what we're doing for insurance.
And this is now stealing from Dave, but really from other people that look at it. It's called, you know, buy term, invest the difference. So go get a quote for whole life and then go get a quote for term. See what the difference is. Pick the term and then invest the difference in Vanguard and you're going to be just fine. Now, having said that, that's very nuanced. That's like a gimmick to get somebody to save just a little bit extra. We're already at a 50, 60, 70% savings rates in some cases. So, you know, you probably don't need that. All you're trying to do, you're already so focused on that. It's a non-issue for you guys, but that's kind of my personal mental philosophy on those.
All right. So let's move on to another big line item, which is automobiles. Jonathan, do you have any car payments currently?
Damn it. I didn't want to answer this one. Yeah, I got
you on the spot.
I got one, man. How do I want to do this? We're going to do an episode on the true cost of car ownership and I'm going to unpack for y'all my new framework, you know, relatively new. I did this math now that we have this podcast and this platform to teach people about these different things. I created this article called The True Cost of Car Ownership, and we're going to have a companion podcast to walk you through the simple math of it so you can see for yourself. But I didn't have the benefit of this when I picked up this car payment. And so yeah, we have a $350 car payment, which I'll pay that sucker off probably. I could either do it this year, I could have it paid off by the beginning of next year. Honestly, the only thing that would make me do one or the other would just be when you have to pay down debt, forces you to take your income, which pushes you into a higher tax bracket. And because I'm finishing up my student loans, I'm already moving towards the end of the income bracket that I wanted to be in. You know, I learned so much from Millionaire Educator. So like I'm thinking about things way differently than I did like 5 years ago. And so I don't want to go into these higher tax brackets. And so my interest is like less than 2%. And so it's kind of one of those things where I'm like, ah, I might just let it ride till beginning of next year and then pay that sucker off in one fell swoop. So anyways, that's my thought process and that's my guilty confession, but I am going to be debt free on my car. And then I'm excited about what that looks like, for my cost of living after it's gone.
So was that a new car when you bought it, or what?
Well, no, I did what you did. I did the CarMax thing, where it was like 2 years old. I got it. I bought it. It's a Jeep Compass. It had 10,000 miles on it. I got it for 18,000 and it came with a warranty on it. I mean, it was just, it's a beautiful car. It was a great price. The gas mileage is good. It just filled every single need. And, you know, I feel just so guilty just even saying this out loud on this podcast. But yeah, I got a car payment. It is what it is.
Yeah. No, I hear you. Yeah. So my car situation is that we have no car payments currently. Haven't for some time. My car is a 2003 Honda Civic that I bought brand new, you know, way back when in 2003 for about $15,000. And it currently has 110,000 miles on it and going strong. I mean, I drive that thing, you know, 2,000 to 3,000 miles a year. So, you know, it can probably last indefinitely until the autonomous vehicle fleet takes over, hopefully.
I heard you talk about that. I don't think it's coming anytime soon, man.
Sooner than you think. We'll see.
All right, guys, we're kicking this one down the road just because car ownership is such a big line item. Now, we wanted to kind of big picture this for you guys and go through all those things. So we're hitting on it, but obviously we could talk about the car payment and the cost of cars way more. So if you like this episode and you want to know more about the true cost of car ownership, I'm thinking that article is going to drop sometime in May in the podcast. I don't know exactly when that's going to land, but we're planning it out right now. So you're going to hear this long before that comes, but it will change the way you look at cars. I mean, I've already done all the research. I've got it distilled in the way I want it. It tells a great story. It's going to be, you're going to be able to take it and take your own specific scenario, and you're going to come away exactly with what that car is actually costing you. And then it'll actually then allow you to come up with a plan for how you can beat the system. And that's what we're always doing, right? We're trying to show you how to beat the system. So I promise you that I'm taking my own advice in this and going forward, it's this information that Brad and I have been researching and putting together that I'm going to use for my car decisions moving forward. And I'm crazy excited to share that with you, but we're just going to kind of end that one, truncate that one, and move on to maybe the next line item for today.
Cool. Yeah, that makes sense. Let's move on to another big one where I think there's some savings for a lot of people is cell phone. Jonathan, I know you've done a ton of research on this. What are you spending on your cell phone? What kind of plan do you have? Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, there's only, in America anyways, there are only two plans that I could in good conscience recommend to anybody right now. And one of them is Republic Wireless. And the second one, which is the one that I'm using currently, is Project Fi. And I'll tell you a little bit more about Project Fi right now. So Project Fi is actually owned by Google, and it's called an MVNO, which I didn't take the time to actually look up what that stands for, but there's a bunch of services that offer MVNOs, but obviously Google is a big name. They've got money to put into the infrastructure for this thing. It's going to be a leader. You know, there's just no way it's not going to be as good as possible. Pros and cons to MVNOs. So the pro is, because they don't actually have to build all the towers, they're using pre-existing lines. Like, they may run on Verizon lines or Sprint lines or T-Mobile lines. It's a fraction of the cost. So the way that Project Fi works, it'll actually only cost, I think they charge you $20 a month for the line, for the actually cell phone line, and then $10 a month for each gigabyte of data that you use. And then anything you don't use, they will credit you back or credit for towards the next month. So 100% efficiency. Now, this is kind of now segueing into the inefficiency of most people's cell phone bills. This is like to me is the most ludicrous loss of money that I willingly bought into for years. And then only finally just checked myself and realized how ridiculous it was. And it's instant savings. So at one point in between my cell phone bill and my internet and cable bill, I was sending Verizon no less than $250 a month. Yeah. So $140 for the cell phone and $110 for the internet. And that was because I was getting one of their deals, right? Their double package deals, right? Thank you, Verizon, for all those savings. But I mean, that if you think about it, that is an expense that you're sending to them that your parents couldn't even conceive of, right? It wasn't even there, but now it's an essential. Oh, I have to have it. I have to have this. And you just got to look at things a little differently and see what the alternative is. So with the cell phone, my life is exactly the same. I have a brand new phone. It's a Nexus. It does. In fact, a lot of the pictures that you see that are taken on the website where they you can tell it's one that I've actually taken, those were taken with the Nexus phone. It is a ridiculously awesome phone. The service is unbelievable. So MVNOs work a little bit differently. They encourage you to use Wi-Fi when possible so you can make calls while you're on your Wi-Fi. You're going to be doing things slightly different. So when you go somewhere that has Wi-Fi, you're going to try to get connected to that for free. That's always ideal. But then when you don't have access to Wi-Fi, you're able to use the surrounding tower. So in this area, it runs on Sprint coverage. In other areas, it may run on something else. I think it's T-Mobile and maybe Verizon. I'm not sure about that. But you know, you have the best of both worlds. And anytime you're running something on Wi-Fi, you're not using bandwidth. So bandwidth on cell phones is the number one thing that causes people's cell phones to go through the roof. Using bandwidth on your cell phone is incredibly inefficient. So if you see your child, you know, watching the YouTube video while you're commuting them in your giant gas guzzling SUV, you slap that phone on the floor and you need to make a change, because you should not be watching YouTube videos on your cell phone while you're out and about. I mean, that's crazy. And if you have Facebook on your cell phone and it auto plays the video as soon as you open your app, that's crazy. You got to stop that. That is costing you. You're bleeding money. So those are just a couple of little life hacks that get me to rant about it. But anyways, I moved away from my Verizon cell phone plan and I just moved to Project Fi. And now my cell phone just cost me, $30 a month.
Yeah, that's cool. And I'm actually on Republic Wireless. I have one of their slightly older plans, so I'm not sure that this is publicly available right now, but I think Republic is pretty comparable to Project Fi. It might be slightly more expensive for people who are just signing up for it. But yeah, I mean, my cell phone situation was this. We were in the dark ages until about a year and a half, 2 years ago. I mean, I literally had like a flip phone. An actual flip phone. And we were doing pay as you go through T-Mobile. It wound up costing, because I was essentially home all the time or in my office. There was never a time where I was actually using a cell phone. So, you know, it was pay as you go per minute. It wound up costing me like $2 a month or something ridiculous.
Wow.
Like that. Yeah. And
you win.
Yeah. Yeah. That was pretty good. But you know, I have since gotten into the real world and, joined the rest of America with, having a phone that actually has data on it.
This guy has multiple businesses online and he was operating it. It always amazes me, like at some point, how ridiculously good he is with his online businesses. And at the same time, how much he is perfectly willing to just be in the dark ages. Like he's totally cool with it. It's amazing.
Yeah. You got to hear Jonathan make fun of my piece of garbage computer. I literally have a $250 like garbage HP laptop. I mean, it's a piece of junk. And you know, he's constantly amazed because Jonathan is a big technophile. He yeah. just loves state-of-the-art stuff, right? I mean, that's
I got it. It's my thing, man. I'm a sucker for it.
I'm the exact opposite. I would love to own nothing. I mean, if I don't get any value from any of this stuff, you know, as long as it works, that's all I care right. about. But with cell phones, you know, we realized eventually we needed to check email and all that stuff, you know, actually on our phones. So I am currently on the Republic Wireless plan where you basically buy a gigabyte of data every month and they refund you, similar to Project Fi, it sounds like, where they refund you the unused amount. So my cell phone cost me somewhere between $12 and $16 a month. So that's it, all in. And, you know, I use this thing. And, you know, again, like Jonathan said, it's about making smart choices, right? So if you, and this actually reminds me of just an unbelievable quote that I heard on the Tim Ferriss podcast in the last couple of weeks, which was, hard choices, easy life, easy choices, hard life. Now take that in. I mean, that is a brilliant, brilliant quote, right? And, you know, it's an easy choice to just use your cell phone indiscriminately, right? To stream YouTube videos or, you know, movies on your cell phone and quote unquote need gigabytes upon gigabytes of data every month, right? Like that's an easy choice, but that makes for a hard life because you're spending hundreds of dollars a month on your cell phone, right? I'm making a slightly more difficult choice, which is just to be mindful of my cell phone use, which is I'm just trying to use as little data as I can. Now, does that mean I'm a crazy person about it? No. I mean, if I'm out and about and I want to check my Gmail or check Facebook, I do that. And that's no big deal because that doesn't take a ton of data. But I'm not streaming movies. So am I giving up something? Am I making a slightly more difficult choice? Yes. But if that means I can get a $12 cell phone bill as opposed to the normal bozo down the street who's paying $100 a month, that's that hard choice that I'm willing to make very, very easily.
No, yeah, that's really cool. We're on the same page with that. I definitely place more of a value in technology. And like you said, I'm the technophile. So for me, I mean, I'm perfectly willing to drop my extra 15. But for me, that was the choice down from, you know, literally 140 down to, you know, between me and my spouse, less than 50 now. So I completely understand your decision tree. And yeah, that's a tech upgrade for you. Okay. So then the next one, we have internet and cable.
Yeah, this is something that we're kind of in flux about. So in my perfect world scenario, we would cut the cord and just kind of cut cable entirely.
Oh, you have cable.
We kind of do. We kind of do, kind of don't. It's a very weird story. I'll try to unpack it here. We essentially tried to cut the cord, but you know, it always comes back to you need the internet, right? And the, you know, Verizon, Comcast, whoever you have.
Who do you have?
We have Verizon now. So, you know, they know you need internet.
Oh, I can help you with this then.
Nice.
I can hop in front of this for you. So you have internet and cable?
Yes.
How much are you paying a month?
We are paying all in about $80 a month.
All right. You can call Verizon. They don't offer it online, but you can call them and then you're allowed to request just the internet package. So I have just Verizon Fios for about $45 a month.
Okay. Okay.
So we can nip this in the bud and get that extra $40 back for you.
Interesting.
They do not offer it on their internet webpage. You will not find it. But if you got in one of their packages and you're like, man, you're offering all these deals. I don't want a triple package service with a phone line that I'm not going to use and you're going to charge me extra for to keep it unlisted. I don't think I really use the cable. I just want the internet. Oh, but I don't see that option. It's because they hide it. And then they hide it some more, but you can call them and just ask for a quote specifically on their internet only package. And yeah, I did that and I was able, that's what I have.
Nice. Very cool. Yeah. So as we always say, actionable tips, I'm picking up something here for sure. So that'll be $35 a month that I get back into my,
I totally did that. You know, I got mine down. I was at $110 a month. And then I realized I don't need 75/25 cable, you know, like this ridiculously crazy fast internet package. And I went down to the 25/25, which is still crazy, crazy fast. I mean, you could download multiple movies at a time if you wanted to without any, you know, slowing down at all. And yeah, now $45 a month. And I am incredibly happy with that. I mean, I operate my business from that. That's my source of entertainment. We can watch TV from that. You know, there's so much value to me in having the internet that it's a no brainer. So in this, from Brad and I's perspective, specifically from mine, I am not a minimalist. You'll pick up on that very, very quickly. I dip a toe in the minimalism world because I understand it. I understand their decision tree and I can appreciate it. But what I try to do is to take the essence of what they're about and figure out how I can use that in my own world, which is I just want to do things a little bit smarter than my neighbor. And, you know, I want to have that lifestyle for a fraction of the cost. So, you know, it's just, you know, you got your own perspective. You can pick and choose what you want. But for me, it's kind of just, I want to do everything in an optimized way, but I'm still a technophile. I love technology. I'm not going to live in a place that doesn't have internet. I couldn't do it.
Yeah, no, I totally hear you. You definitely need internet. No doubt about it, but yeah, that's cool. So, you know, Jonathan, do you guys have Netflix or Amazon Prime or Hulu or any of that kind of stuff? Or
yeah,
do you have?
I have Amazon Prime. We have had Netflix off and on, you know, I love Netflix. It's great. But right now I just have Amazon Prime.
Cool. Yeah. So,
and we have the Roku too, by the way. I think Liz from Frugal has mentioned that. That's fantastic. I mean, and also, one of the things that I've learned, you know, I'm big on, I love TV, but at the same time, TV is the enemy of life. Like I love watching TV. I could watch Seinfeld all day long, but when I spend time on a bender, just watching TV, you know, the only thing I really want to do is just eat, which then affects my health. Which then affects my motivation. You know, in this world, they say it's not actually that you don't have time. It's that you don't have motivation and your time is getting sucked up by all the dumb stuff. And when I get in these places where I'm extremely energetic and motivated, that's when I do things like build Choose FI or write up 5 new articles or make 5 new contacts and just, you know, you just supercharge your life. But then when you look at the times where nothing got done and you say, I just didn't feel like I have any time. How much time did you spend watching TV? I mean, TV is a total waste of time for the most part. I mean, there's entertainment, you know, it's cool. I get it. I'm not anti-TV, but I am anti-TV when you're complaining about how you never get anything done and how your life doesn't feel like it has any purpose or anything else. I mean, what happened if you just didn't have access to it or were just gone? What would you do with all that free time?
Yeah, that's funny. I was just listening to a podcast this morning about that, where he was saying, I guess his son decided to, this is the Good Dad Project. It's a nice podcast to listen to. He said his son for Lent gave up all screens. Okay. And what wound up happening was the entire family took that over. And, you know, now they have all these hours where they're not just sitting there staring at their screens. And, you know, they've found it's just improved their family life dramatically to the point where, you know, they're talking at night, they're playing board games, they're doing all sorts of just actual quality time with their family. And yeah, I mean, that's a huge one. So yeah, just a little sidebar, but I thought it was interesting.
All right. So let's talk about gym memberships. Do you have a gym membership?
I do, actually. About a year and a half ago, one of these low-cost gyms called Crunch opened up about a mile from my house, and it's only $10 a month, which is, you know, pretty fantastic. They actually have an upgraded membership that for a whopping $20 a month, where you get unlimited classes, group classes. And for some reason, with my mentality, like, that's just something that I really enjoy. So I actually get some value out of those classes, and we, you know, I do personally have the $20 per month membership.
So yeah, I've always had a gym membership up until recently. I've been at the Golds where, you know, it was $30 a person. So me and my wife would have been 60. I did move to one of the lower cost options. So in my case, it was Planet Fitness for $10 a month, which is great. Cause instead of being around with a bunch of, you know, dudes that are all wearing spaghetti tank tops, you're just with a bunch of like 50-year-old people that are all on the cardio machine. Nobody's touching the weights. Right. So that was great for a while. Actually now, I just dropped it. Yeah. I stopped it altogether. So I have a $0 gym membership. And what I did is I did some, I guess you could call it radical insourcing. I actually turned one of the entryway room in my house into a little, you know, mini gym. I mean, Brad will tell you it's legit. But I dropped probably close to $1,000 getting all the equipment in there. And my biggest thing was time. So once you're post financial independence, you have, you know, an unlimited amount of time, that you can then figure out what you want to use. And obviously a lot of that should go to fitness and health. But when you're in the grind, when you're on the hamster wheel, you have a very limited amount of time and you have to choose how to effectively use that. So for me, the decision was not just how much does the gym membership cost, but what is the mental hurdle of actually preparing to go to the gym, going to the gym, coming back, and then getting ready for the next activity. And so I was having to put myself through contortions, like getting up at 4 so that my wife and I could go at 5 so that she could be back at 5:45 to get ready to go to school at 7, you know, and then she's pregnant and she doesn't want me to go without her. And so she wants to go with me, but that's overly stressing her out. Or conversely, you know, she and I, maybe she gets back and then, you know, after an 8-hour, 9-hour day and we're trying to go together and then the gym's completely packed and you get through it and you're able to do it for maybe 6, 7, 8 weeks, but it doesn't add joy to your life. It just feels like something you're going through the motions of doing and you just hate it. And that's kind of the place I was finding myself in. Now, I'm not saying that always needs to be the case, but that is where we felt like we were at. We were not enjoying it. So by me moving it all, just cutting it out, doing a replacement, focusing on functional fitness and then what I could do in this home gym, really there was no sacrifice there. And in fact, it allowed, now the time element's completely gone. I move from one activity, I knock it out, I can go back. And I've loved that. And so now I've cut, you know, essentially I've saved $60 a month. So if you multiply that times the safe withdrawal rate of, you know, 25, that tells you the value of what my gym is, you know, every single year.
Yeah. And I'll say for sure, his gym is legit. I mean, it's awesome. If you could help me build that for $1,000, I'll do that in a heartbeat.
Well, I could post the link for some of the stuff I got. Some of it was on Amazon. You know, that was actually interesting when you're buying the gym. I'm all about getting stuff used. I've been big on that for a while. That sounds great. But at some point, when you start talking about heavy items, you realize that you're going to have to be strategic with where you get these things. So things like a squat rack, you know, and a treadmill, if you decide to do all of that, what are you going to put it in? You're going to put it in your little Econo hatchback, you know? So let's say you go find a deal. Nobody in Richmond has it, but you find one in Maryland. I mean, this is really the situation I was in. You find one in Maryland that has it. Are you going to go there? You're going to disassemble it and you're going to put it in the back of your little thing. Are you going to hire a U-Haul? I mean, you just got to actually think through that stuff. So in some cases, after I did all the math on it, I was like, oh, I could just order this on Amazon and it'll come to my home, shipping, you know, Prime. So no shipping. It'll be right there. And the time that I'll save and the money I'll save, it actually would have costed me more to buy it used. So it's one of those hilarious instances. And there's a few of those that you stumble across in this world where buying something new and then having it shipped directly to your door actually cost you way less than finding a great deal in another location where you have to figure out transportation and other things. I mean, I just think for the sake of irony, it was hilarious. And I'll post the link for the squat rack that I found somewhere that y'all can check it out. It was a really good deal.
Yeah, that's super cool. And just to piggyback here on even though this isn't gym per se, this is definitely fitness related, is just in the last 6 months or so, I've started doing Brazilian jiu-jitsu, actually. And after listening to the Jocko Willink podcast on Tim Ferriss and then his own podcast, I know we had Mr. 1500 on and he quoted Jocko with his discipline equals freedom, which is to go along with that Tim Ferriss quote that I mentioned earlier. Just another just phenomenal, phenomenal quote, but it really got me interested in jiu-jitsu. And, you know, if you go to a regular jiu-jitsu place, it's going to be $100 to $150 a month, which is crazy. And there was just simply no way that I was going to do that. But what I did was, you know, it's with the five mentality, it's thinking a little bit differently. And, you know, I just did a ton of research and I actually found Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, which, you know, they're the family who essentially created jiu-jitsu in Brazil. And they have these things throughout the country because they don't have that many of their certified training centers. They have what's known as Gracie garages. So if, you know, a couple people in a metro area want to get together and practice and study Gracie jiu-jitsu, but they don't live anywhere near a certified training center, they can literally do it at their house. And, you know, there are some of these things where they need to, you know, you need to have mats and you need to have, you know, X, Y, and Z. And you literally buy their DVDs and you train in this garage for free. It's $0. So I'm very fortunate. There's one only about 10 minutes away from my house. And the guy who runs it has been studying this for 7 years. He's essentially an expert at, you know, teaching the beginnings of jiu-jitsu. And it literally cost me $0. Wow. I go there. Yeah, it's amazing.
I assumed you paid for it. I didn't.
Yeah, no, it's completely free. So I go twice a week to this guy's house. There are six of us who show up. And I mean, it's legit. We train for real. And, you know, I'm on my path, you know, to get started with this. And, you know, jiu-jitsu aside, it's what I like to look for is like, how can I get better over my lifetime? And you know, this is maybe like a higher level and not for this particular podcast, but, you know, to unpack fully. But, you know, that's something that I can learn for the next 10 or 20 years and just get better and better at. And, you know, I like to take a step back and get out of the daily grind and just say, like, what can I do that I'm going to be better at in my life? How is my life going to be better 10 years from now? And, you know, something like that. Or, you know, for me, it's a lot of these things are physical. It's, you know, just getting in better shape, getting more flexible, you know, practicing yoga. And that's something I'm actually doing with my girls now. And my wife as well. The four of us are doing yoga every single day. You know, it's just getting better every day. And that's something we're working on. So anyway, another little sidebar, but just something we're doing that's, you know, a phi hack that really just makes our lives better.
Very cool. Let's see. So we've talked about a bunch of stuff already. And there's only probably a few line items left that are on my just guaranteed monthly expenses. I mean, everybody has discretionary spending, and the thing about discretionary, it's discretionary. I mean, you could just not spend money on that stuff. But there's a few more that are kind of baked into everybody's daily lives that we'll talk about. So food and alcohol, we've gone in depth on this, so we're not going to spend a lot of time on this one. But what I found is just tracking it and having a plan can literally cut your food budget by 30 to 40% without even blinking an eye. And I found in the past that I could easily spend over $800 a month on food, just for two people. I mean, it's not difficult, especially if there's restaurants and alcohol baked in. My wife and I consume very little alcohol, just almost none. I'm not against it. I don't have any problem with it. We'll buy a six pack, a mixed six pack, and put it in the fridge, but it slows us down from a fitness perspective. It's not a large social thing for us. So, you know, just that for us, that's the non-factor. I think there's probably room for balance in there. I know people do craft brews, the people homebrew at home. I think you should always be thinking about the value. So if it adds community, if it allows you to, if it's a hobby for you, it's something, you know, that's your thing, that's great. But if you're drinking alone, You just got to ask yourself what the value is. A couple others. So auto and gas. I mean, this is pretty straightforward too. If you drive a big SUV or a truck that gets 15 miles to the gallon, and or conversely, you drive like in a little Econo hatchback that gets 30 miles to the gallon. Let's say that you work 15 miles away, you know, one way. That difference over the course of a year is about $600 to $700 just in gas. So just, you know, making a small change like that, moving to one of these little 30 mile per gallon gas zippers can make a big difference in your line item budget. And then finally, you know, travel. So Brad and I both have talked nonstop, especially episode 9, about how to use travel rewards to travel the world for free. I've told y'all in detail how I used to plan on saving upwards of $300 a month so that my wife and I could travel to Africa, you know, every couple of years to see family. And that line item has essentially been removed. So just for the sake of brevity, we'll kind of use that as a final place to stop. But this was just a quick picture at some of the things that Brad and I, you know, both have spent money on. Everybody spends money on, and then kind of maybe how you could look at optimizing that. Brad, did you have any final thoughts?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you, and I'll talk about these too, but just real quick, like, are there any line items in your annual budget that you feel are just like completely frivolous, or like you're embarrassed about, or, you know, places, or maybe even pivoting, just like places where you spend your money intentionally that other people might not, but you get value from?
Yeah. So definitely cable internet. Like, some people were happy to have much slower internet. I am not. The amount of stuff that I do from home, I'm perfectly happy to spend money on that. I also like fast computers, so I'm perfectly happy to spend money on almost anything technology related. I get value from it. I'm kind of an embarrassment to the FI community from a car perspective. It took me a long time to mentally be in the same place as other people on cars. I really would love to be the guy that has an urban moped and a bicycle, but I'm just not. And I don't know if part of that is because my job, I can't show up to my work sweating. You know, like you get that physical exercise from being on a bike, riding to work. I'm shirt and tie, man. I'm in it. So I don't know. Maybe I'm tied to the car from that perspective. I've always had trouble just visualizing what that would look like. But I got to say, I'm feeling like I'm more, every single year I get more optimized. I mean, every single year I feel like I'm a little bit closer. When I started, it was just gaping inefficiencies. And so now I'm kind of like 3 years in, and a lot of these things are wrapping up themselves. The car payment's gone. The cable's gone. The cell phone, the expensive cell phone is gone. And I have all these kind of optimized replacements that have been made based on the math, right? That I've looked at over time. The car insurance just got moved down from comprehensive to liability on one of my vehicles. So I actually do, this is the decision tree that I use when I'm doing these things. And going forward, my car purchases will be, you know, my mentality on that has totally adjusted. So you got to start somewhere, but then once you start, these are some of the thought processes that I went to get to where I am. And yeah, do I still spend money? One thing Brad and I didn't really talk about is discretionary spending. You know, you can spend money on a ton of, some people have like buying clothes or shoes or all these other things. And that's great. And you probably need to dial it in if your progress to FI is being slowed down by it. But these are the fixed expenses that most people have. And this is how I analyze them to see whether or not I could get them lower. And so, Brad, you know, in that same vein, is there anything that you want to talk about in terms of maybe where you spend money that people would be surprised by, or what you get value out of that maybe people would be surprised by?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, before I go into that real quick, I just want to say, like, you know, what we've talked about in this episode, just on these major expenses, these major line items, this is the difference between the Joneses and people on the path to FI. And what we've talked about here, and, you know, we're not doing anything crazy. Jonathan and I aren't depriving ourselves in our lives. We're just being a little bit smarter, right? And when you're a little bit smarter on most of the major line items on your budget, it amounts to huge savings, to the point where instead of saving nothing or saving a minuscule 5 or 10%, I mean, I'm saving 60 to 80% of our income every single year. I mean, depending on the year, that's a crazy amount. And if you just heard that in passing, in theory, you would think that person is just depriving themselves and living this awful life. And I mean, that is the farthest thing from the truth. I feel like we're awash in spending. Like, we're, you know, I joke with Laura that we're, you know, spend like drunken sailors, and, you know, and it's really not that big of a dollar figure when you add everything together, but when you're just mindful. And, you know, in where we spend money, just to answer Jonathan's specific question, is, you know, we're not misers at all. Like, one of the things that we get value from is our local pool in the summer. So our pool membership costs $500 a year. And my girls love to swim. They're on the swim team. So, I mean, so between the bathing suits we have to buy for the swim team and the actual swim team membership and, you know, any kind of lessons, I mean, we're spending a couple hundred dollars extra per year. So, I mean, you're talking $800 plus per year on our local pool, which, you know, most people would say, you got to be out of your mind. That's crazy. But, you know, we go there every single day for 3 months straight and we get a huge amount of value. I mean, that is like our social life for the year. It's something we look forward to the whole year because we have tons of friends at that pool. We spend hours a day there. It's less than a mile from our house. And I mean, you know, while in a vacuum, that $800 sounds like a big figure, that's a pittance for what we're getting for it. And we're just getting so much community out of that and so much enjoyment. So that's something, even if it was double that, I would pay without blinking an eye. So, you know, something like that, you know, I mean, that's really the big thing for us. So it's being intentional about your money. So this is not being a miser, you know, following the path to FI is not about depriving yourself. It's just being smart. And, you know, some people out there might say you're not being smart by spending that kind of money, but I reject that completely. So it's about value, in my opinion.
That's awesome. And, you know, I have this, if you're in this place where you are working on debt and you're trying to get out of debt, go sign up for our email list and then specifically request access to the get out of debt template. And one of the first ones I go over is that monthly expense tracker. It actually shows you what those expenses look like. But just for the sake of this conversation today, I was just looking at the math on it. It actually blows my mind. So once you come to the end of that optimized trail of what my life actually costs, and again, I'm talking about kind of that fixed expenses. This does not include discretionary spending, but like, you know, in a worst case scenario where you're not doing any discretionary spending, you're only just what's the cost of our lifestyle as we have it right now. With the mortgage and property taxes included, my life costs $26,000 a year. That's what it costs. I make well over six figures and there is a lot of margin there to hit five very, very quickly once you get to that optimized path. If I didn't have a mortgage, if I chose to pay my mortgage off, the cost of my life without any discretionary spending would just be $14,000. $14,000. That's nothing, right? My life costs nothing to, in general. And how much flexibility and freedom does that give you when you're making these life choices?
Yeah, that's a remarkable figure.
And I was looking at it, you know, before I optimized it, you know, and it wasn't too bad even before, but I was kind of doing this alternate path where you got car payments and student loans and all this stuff. You know, even with all those choices, it was like at $44,000. You pay all that off. So you've optimized everything using the suggestions we just gave you. You're down to now, you know, $26,000 with a mortgage or $14,000 without one. And then how much room does that give you? You now have like literally that gives you $16,000 in discretionary spending. I mean, you can do a lot of stuff with $16,000 in discretionary spending and you're going to feel very comfortable. So when we talk about living that entry-level middle-class lifestyle, but smarter, that's what we're talking about. We don't feel like we're depriving ourselves. And so we could hit, I could have $16,000 in discretionary spending and still keep my total cost of living under $40,000 a year without, no problem.
Yeah, that's amazing. And Jonathan mentioned to get on our email list if you want to get this monthly expense tracker. Two easy ways to do it is just one, go to choosefi.com/subscribe. Or since you're listening to this on your phone in all likelihood, we have a nice, cool little hack way to get on our email list is just text the word choosefi, one word, choosefi to 44222.
You've been listening to Choose FI Radio Podcast, where we help middle-class America build wealth. One life hack at a time.